Hello, everyone. Thanks again for downloading or listening to this next episode of the podcast. I'm actually delighted today to be joined today by Jeff Cohen, who is the president and CEO of Chicago Quantum, another sort of consultancy and services firm based around the quantum technology industry, quantum computing, and everything in between. So, Jeff, thanks a lot for giving me an hour of your time.
All right, Simon, thank you. I'm excited to be on the call.
Yes. So first of all, I think we talk a little bit about your background and sort of how you got first sort of introduced into quantum, mainly because many people may not have heard about your Chicago Quantum at all yet.
Right. So, 30 years of management consulting and IT consulting experience, and had worked my way up through, KPMG, so the big, I guess now it's the Big Four, McKinsey. So I was able to do a bunch of strategic things, and then corporate. So I ran a business at Siemens, ran one at HP, ran one at IBM. And so, at the end of all this, I understood that I could grow a consultancy, and I thought cloud is commoditizing, and there's nothing really on the horizon. And I forced myself to really think about it. And quantum technology, quantum computing, sensing, navigation, communication are the only things that will help our economy to grow. And so I might as well get involved. And then I picked up my first physics book in October of last year. And I've been doing it ever since.
Cool. But before, when you were doing management consultancy, was it for the IT sector or was across a whole bunch of different professions?
It was all IT related. In many cases, it was deal negotiation, it was outsourcing or restructuring. But every once in a while, I'd have to get very technical. And it was, example, re-architecting a trading system for one of the big investment banks and software development life cycles. So always around IT, but always the financial side of it.
And how did you first hear about quantum computing or quantum technology?
So I worked for IBM, and Ginni Rometty used to talk about quantum internally. And so I had access to a lot of IBM materials. I started reading and I started speaking to the teams. And everyone said the same thing. We're at least 5 years away from any reasonable revenue. So don't waste your time. Not a good idea. And that's why I'm not doing it with IBM. And it just, it struck me. Everyone I spoke to thought it was not a good idea because they were all thinking, just as an example, the year before we had sold $447 million of cloud-related and IT-related consulting in my little group. 600 people. Actually, it wasn't even 600, it was like 350 or 400 people at the time. And so, why would you go into something where IBM as a corporation isn't really going to earn any revenue? When you could be earning $400 million in revenue just doing what you did last year. So it's a bet for the future.
So in this particular case, I mean, were you always based in Chicago, or did you sort of put Chicago Quantum there because of the Chicago Quantum Exchange and all the things happening down at the university?
Well, the first reason is I actually live in the Chicagoland area, and I thought about the advantages of Chicago. So we had not only do we have the Chicago Quantum Exchange, you got U of C, Northwestern around here, Purdue, University of Wisconsin, DePaul, University of Illinois, tons of schools. We also have our research labs. You have a Fermi lab in Argonne, and then I don't know the exact number, but I'm guessing we have 25,000 professional IT consultants in Chicago. So I thought it's a great place to source the expertise. And then also we have a great client base. And then the thing that tipped me to actually open the business was I was invited to attend one of the Chicago Quantum Exchange's large meetings where they had government, corporations, the research labs, the academics. And after a day of listening, I realized there was something there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all a bet on a future and what it could do. And the more I learn about it, the more I get these tiny little intuitive slivers of business value that could come from quantum mechanical computation.
So, I mean, how much of sort of your work at the moment is still sort of trying to get your head around the technology and sort of getting it sorted out in your own mind as to how it can be used versus, okay, we're going to go straight to look at the businesses and look at potential use cases or try to convince them that they should be getting involved in this now?
So the answer changed a few weeks ago. So I would say up until a few weeks ago, it was 90 to 95% trying to understand.
Mm-hmm.
5% reaching out to my network and having them be very supportive, but reminding me that I didn't know enough yet to be helpful.
Right.
And so what changed was one of my team members, so we actually have 7 associates for the business. Everyone works for free.
Mm-hmm.
We're all betting on the same thing. And they said, you got to go for a grant. One of the guys went to DC, met with a politician, and the politician said, there's a ton of money out there. Go get some. And so I looked, and there are 2 SBIR, Small Business Innovation Research Grants,
mm-hmm.
that we are considering to apply for. And we went through 2 steps with each of them. One of them I had to fill out like a pre-application, and they really liked it. And within a couple of days, they came back and said, we invite you to apply. And then not knowing any better, being like an IT executive, I reached out to the decision maker, the program officer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so what do I do, right? Like, is this real, blah, blah, blah. And,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he came back and he's like, no, yeah, this is real. I want you to apply. Thank you, you know, no issues. And same thing with a Department of Energy one. And so today I spent 7 hours reading every patent and most of the academic research around the NSF grant that we're going to apply for, because that's actually something I have expertise on. It's a financial services thing.
Right, right.
I mean, I've got undergrad, grad, PhD level kind of stuff. I've done this a long time. And so I'm very comfortable with the 7 hours of homework I had to do. But then to go back and apply it to quantum, I'm still scratching my head. Like I can get the data. The team right now is running everything classically. And the research grant is going to be to run the classical approach on 4 different quantum systems. At least 1 or 2 are going to be trapped ion. We'll do superconducting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd love to do photonic if I could. And we'll definitely do a D-wave system.
Right.
And what so now it's about the data and the system, and then we're going to recreate everything on quantum, but that's not enough. Just by the way, the industry loves it that we're going to have a benchmark, an actual application, but then we have to find the secret sauce.
And this is in a quantum algorithm related to financial services applications?
Well, we might have to make our own algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I mean, I've browsed the zoo, so I understand the heuristic algorithms and the deterministic algorithms. But honestly, no one has an idea of how we're going to basically improve on the classical work. these classical algorithms have been run since the 1960s. Markowitz, William Sharp with the Sharp ratio. So there's some, and this is my belief, that there's something about a quantum mechanical system, whether it's randomness, whether it's sampling, whether it's just amplitudes, like playing with the amplitudes and canceling things out, that's going to get us a better answer. And I'm willing to bet 3 to 6 months of part of my team to research it, to try everything we can think of. Because if it was simple, it'd already be done.
So, I mean, I suppose it's an interesting thing from a consultancy point of view. I mean, you're effectively doing your own research.
Yes.
And I mean, is this in a partnership
with
anyone? Or is this just all of you, just you guys?
So up until Q to B, which was the conference in San Jose, by the way, we had a great time. We were also at QEDC.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of support. And since then, we've spoken to a couple of the vendors. The hardware providers are almost all universally in support. And so we'll get low cost or no cost time to run things. We'll get support to get the encoding and embedding right. On the academic side, I haven't found an academic. I mean, I have one in mind, but I haven't found anyone that has a lot of value to add, because we're just going to trial and error this thing. We may partner with some of the data companies, and we do have one client in mind that we've already met with, and they – so if I take a step back, 13 years ago, I had a really great asset management client, and now they run somewhere between $500 billion and $1 trillion of assets. So that chief investment officer that we met with last week would be willing to consider being a collaboration partner if we can put a little more structure around that research we're doing. And in their case, this product may never see the light of day, because they would just want to use it to serve their clients. The other option for us is software as a service, you know, charge people, do like a financial engines deal where we go after the small and medium-sized investor. And other banks and investment companies have expressed an interest. So if we don't work with the one client, I'm sure 4 or 5 others might be willing to be collaboration partners.
So, I mean, people who sort of listen to the podcast and who do a lot of quantum research, I mean, they're fully aware of you know, quantum chemistry algorithms, algorithms for factoring, you know, the sort of standard ones that we're all taught when we take courses in quantum information or do graduate work. But I'm not sure exactly how many people understand exactly what kind of problems the financial services industry are looking at, and what evidence did they sort of have behind them when they said, you know what, quantum could actually help these problems. Because as many people know, quantum is not a panacea for everything. There has to be a certain level of structure to the underlying problem for it actually to be useful. But run us through a little bit of what the financial services industry does, what they're interested in, and in your opinion, what got them sort of hooked on quantum.
Perfect. Okay. So if I can do differential equations or linear algebra, so straight optimization a la D-Wave, or even simulated annealing, that's easy for banks, insurance companies, and asset managers. So Barclays looked at trade settlement. By the way, in their paper, I was so disappointed. They settled 3 transactions. In a night, a large investment bank, I don't have a good number, but millions of transactions. So to be able to spend 8 months or 9 months, whatever they spent, for 3, I was making jokes about it at the conference. But anything with straight optimization that could improve the processing of transactions is going to be helpful. Because right. just think of your own checking account. If you write 10 checks and you're going to bounce, there's a way to have you bounce like 8 or 9 of those checks by cashing the first one first. Or there's a way to have you maybe bounce only one check.
Mm-hmm.
And there's math behind that. If we can automate and improve that answer or make it a lot faster, we're going to do okay. The second use case that I've seen, so the anything on that kind of settlement or transaction processing is about optimization. The second is that there's quantitative traders, there's high-speed traders, and they're looking for arbitrage.
Right.
So in their world, a penny counts, and information asymmetry is their stock and trade. I think of companies, I don't want to say names, but there's actually one of the top three hedge funds is in Chicago, and they would look for maybe high-speed opportunities. I used to know a bunch of the traders. And so they'll build a portfolio trading model. They'll watch the market, and they'll take advantage of, let's say, reversion to mean algorithms, things like that. So speed for them matters.
Uh-huh.
Large dimension sizes, but also maybe finding a pattern in the data that you and I can't find. And that only works for maybe a month or two until the market catches up, but you might look at who's entering orders.
Right.
You know, so quantitative traders, we're not involved in that part of the business, but I know that the hedge fund in Chicago was looking at this well before any of the technology was announced. They were hiring PhDs and they were building their own quantum simulators, quantum technologies on their own. And I know it, that's actually one of the other reasons I thought to get into it, because it was all super secret, but then they posted a help wanted where they disclosed what they were doing. And I'm thinking to myself, I trust those guys. If they're doing it, we could. Now, the third type of model is just good old-fashioned investment advice. So you and I, we have a couple thousand dollars to invest. Maybe we want to invest for our kids' college. And there's a way to invest that's just better than other ways. We reduce the variability of our stock price or our portfolio value while maximizing the expected return.
Mm-hmm.
So that is called portfolio optimization. And this has been a problem that has been having to be solved, you know, decades. It's a big data problem. I'm not going to say it's NP hard or hard mm-hmm. or even intractable. It's just difficult. So in order just to get the data, I was talking to a firm that will sell me the data for $18,000 a year
right.
for one part of the portfolio. The data is expensive, right? And so, and then what about the computing time? If I'm going to do a model, I don't know, with 50 dimensions and 250 assets, and I've got to do covariance matrices, and I've got to look at all these different dimensions. It just, your head spins. So you end up just coming up with a heuristic that says mm-hmm. dogs of the Dow, buy the 10 worst performing Dow stocks and then pray, right?
Right.
or just call Vanguard and do what they say. But we believe on the team that problem can be solved with quantum effects.
I was just going to say, it sounds as though many of these problems, as you said, they're high data problems. I mean, data volume is a huge part of this. Now, quantum computers aren't really good at large volume data sets. I mean, this is why factoring is so good in quantum computing. It's actually, you know, the problem is actually represented in, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 bits. So has there been anything coming out of the academic community or even the business community that sort of suggests that quantum, you know, is going to provide an advantage in these spaces?
No. There's nothing publicly available that says quantum will help.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, all of the published research, all of the patents I'm looking at, there is no evidence that quantum computing will help anyone build a better stock portfolio. None. It's awful. It's mm-hmm. It's a wasteland out there. The question that I would have for you then is, why is QCware working with Goldman Sachs on this problem? Why is IBM and others working with, let's say, Standard Chartered or Barclays?
Mm-hmm.
Why did every financial service firm that I spoke to at the conference be willing to take a call? And in fact, we had seven PhDs in the room. We set up a meeting within 24 hours with one of them. Why would that be? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't even matter if it works. What matters is we're going to try some new methods, some new tools. The Hilbert space. If I can get a description of the current state of something affecting a stock price and get it loaded in the Hilbert space and then have the complex probabilities cancel out and the thing flashes green, you know, buy that stock.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it 150 or 500 times and I make money 60% of the time. It's good enough. And these banks, the one that I spoke to, right, a number of PhDs, all curious. So I'm wondering whether either we're on a fool's errand
mm-hmm.
and we're going after the whole, like truly the holy grail, right? Turn lead to gold. Or are we just going to recreate what everyone's been doing for 50 years on a quantum computer, declare victory that it takes a week to do what a server can do in a minute?
Yeah.
and walk away a loser, right? So it's possible. But honestly, I'm up a lot of nights thinking about this problem. And I don't want to say it on a podcast, but I do believe that there are some quantum mechanical effects. And it's even this – just a silly thing, right? So quantum algorithms tend to look at linearity, right? Linear data.
Mm-hmm.
But the stock market is affected by sometimes exponential things. And so is there a way to affect a model – by looking at, you know, nonlinear effects? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that feels interesting. And I'm reminded of what my math, we have a math PhD on the team, what he told me. He said even a 1% or even smaller than 1% improvement in predictive power of a model with the stock market can make someone a billionaire. So we only have to be a little better than classical.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And actually, that's why our T-shirts say create quantum advantage. We don't have to be better than a supercomputer. We just have to be better than our client's computer.
Right, right. But I mean, in this particular case, I mean, we've got, as you said, I mean, people have in-house simulators. We have, I think the last time I checked, there was somewhere on the order of 150 or 160 quantum simulators that are, you know, basically open source at this point. How much development do you look at with these algorithms before you even necessarily have to touch, you know, an IonQ machine or a Rigetti machine or an IBM machine? Because, I mean, these things will simulate up to 20, 30, sometimes even 40 qubits, depending on the back-end hardware that you have.
Well, this is where the... This is where we're drawing a line between quantum research and classical research. So today it's about getting a clean data set, one that we can stand behind.
Mm-hmm.
It's about building classical. I mean, we have a simulated annealer that we built. So maybe whatever, however many you knew of, there's one more. And we've already run it on D-Wave.
Mm-hmm.
And we know we can create the exact same answer in D-Wave. If the server takes, whatever, 15 minutes, I think D-Wave took 70 nanoseconds.
Right.
So that's a pretty good speed up.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're just going to kind of – we're going to do what we consider the easy stuff. Run it on D-Wave, run it classically, get the math as tight as we can, and then we're going to turn over to the quantum systems, which mm-hmm. we're going to need grant money to pay for, because what if it's 20 grand on Rigetti and 20 grand on, you know, everyone's system? It's hard to afford that as a startup.
Yeah.
And we're not really asking for free stuff, and so we're going to have to pay for it.
Companies at this point, clearly, you know, all of them are desperately searching for something that can be run on their hardware that actually provides some kind of advantage over classical techniques. And, you know, I would imagine that if you found something that was quite useful, I mean, you wouldn't necessarily even need to pay anything for these guys. I mean, they'd be biting at your legs.
Yeah. So imagine if I found a $1 billion algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it on your server, and you let me use it for free. Aren't you going to expect partial ownership of what we developed?
Well, I mean, I was under the impression that that was part of the terms and conditions on any of the cloud services at the moment.
Maybe not if we're paying for it. We're like Barclays. We're going to pay for it, right? Mm-hmm. And whatever advantage we gain, we own that model. It's a very much a profit motive here. It's not a research motive. We want to help, you know, regular everyday investors make more money in the stock market, and so that's the reason why we're not looking for handouts from the different hardware vendors. Of course, they'd want to prove that their quantum. By the way, this is the whole reason to do it on four different systems. Because what if the quantum effects are actually different on an ion trap machine with the what I heard was greater connectivity than on a superconducting qubit, you know, Josephson junction, where I've got to kind of walk my way around the specific architecture of the actual processor. There was a Russian guy who he was just joking, I think. He posted a circuit diagram. And I came back to him and I said, that doesn't make sense. I don't know of any Russian system that has five interconnected qubits. That would be one, you know, with direct connect to four others. What's your architecture? And he just laughed and he said something silly, like, I don't know what you're talking about. So, but on an ion trap machine, there's more connectivity. So what if we can optimize a portfolio on one type of system, but not on the others? That's going to get interesting too, because then we're going to have to partner with that company.
Right, right. Do you see a quintessential difference between like an annealing system and a circuit-based system?
Well, our experience is mostly with annealing right now, so we might have a bias, right? We know how those work. We know the guys. It's easy. Mm-hmm. It's actually easy for us. Like, I think we ran our portfolio optimization system on a D-Wave, and we got it to run from nothing, a couple of minutes, an hour, and we were able to recreate the answers from the classical system.
Right.
So that's easy. The question, though, for us is, are we going to do these new heuristic algorithms, or are we going to go deterministic? Deterministic, you cannot. It's what you said before. You can't embed a large problem on today's NISQy, you know, relatively small quantum computers.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be heuristic, and I'm just not sure how we would do that. The guys are all saying, right, we have to do ansatz, we have to do QAOA, and we have to seed the problem, and we have to do like a genetic algorithm hybrid system.
Mm-hmm.
I actually understand what that means, by the way. And I'm thinking to myself, It just all sounds very complicated. Could I do it in a way that I could repeat it, and I could prove it, and I could recreate the results, you know, every single time? Because this only works if it works every time, not if it only works one time. So
I mean, how do you sort of benchmark these things? As you said, if you find a billion-dollar algorithm or something for the financial services industry that's worth a lot of money, I mean, doesn't that justify then spending, you know, $200-300 million on a massive supercomputing cluster? How do you sort of look at this and say, well, quantum is definitely going to be worth it when, you know, I could fork out $250 million now and build a pretty good supercomputer?
So BASF has a pretty good supercomputer. So what you're saying makes sense. BASF has it. They built it. It's I think it was a Hewlett Packard technology. I don't know what they spent, but I believe it was well over $100 million. The investment banks today can afford to buy millions of hours of time. And even in my own experience in their data centers, they have some pretty advanced, cool stuff in their data centers. And even a retail bank I worked with had a petabyte in a basement. A petabyte of data in their basement, like that they could play with for development. You know, so yes, they can afford it. But now imagine, this is where the magic comes in. Imagine if I could buy an hour of compute time for $2,000, and in that hour I can optimize 1,000 portfolios. Mm-hmm. So it's $2 a portfolio. This is a joke. Yeah. It's a joke. And so even if they raise the price to $3,000 an hour, at some point, a whole quantum computer is $10 million. It's not a big deal. So if I could do this on a consistent basis, even Chicago Quantum could spend the $10 million, buy the quantum computer, right, and actually keep it going. You just have to find the secret sauce, and then you have to defend it immediately with patents and other protections.
But I suppose that's always the question with these algorithms, in a sense. If you're not providing, you know, if you're not looking at sort of asymptotic scalability, you're not looking at proving that certain algorithms are going to run faster on a quantum computer. At the end of the day, if you're looking for constant factor speedups, okay, you might say, well, we've got a quantum algorithm that can optimize, you know, portfolio X, but it's going to require 100 qubits to do, you know, anything. Or I can run it now on a quite expensive classical computer, but the classical computer does exist. A 100-qubit quantum computer doesn't.
I see where you're going. So the speed up is not the value. The speed up today is not the value, because I can optimize a reasonably sized portfolio on my server, a $1,000 server at home. Mm-hmm. And what that means is I could go to Amazon or Google Cloud Platform, and I can get 100 servers. I can get 1,000 servers, or whatever, $7 an hour, right? So for $7,000, I can run a pretty big problem. The value isn't the speed up. The value is the quantum effects.
Right.
And I'm on purpose trying not to say too much, but we have a series of things that we want to test that are only available through a quantum system. And so in a way, I'm like the biggest believer. I'm like the Star Trek guy who believes in beam me up, Scotty, even though I have no reason to believe it, because these are mechanical systems, analog systems. The stock market is an organic entity. I look at the stock market when it's open, like during the day, as being like a body, like a beating heart. And the best way to model an organic system is going to be with a quantum computer. And maybe that's the belief we have.
But I suppose it's still confusing me a little bit, in the sense that I mean, the quantum effects, I mean, all that does is potentially require less steps to go through a computational algorithm. I suppose there's nothing else there aside from potentially having a faster solution to a specific problem. So isn't the question always about speed?
No. If it is, great. If we could, if we can run a rather large problem through a quantum computer and solve it, 25,000 times faster, there's going to be value. For us, that'll be a relatively small market valuation, because we can go to whatever, the top 20 banks, and we could say we can speed this up a little. And so for us, it would be success. We'd get paid, but it probably wouldn't be a big success. What would be a bigger success is if we can figure out how to use some of the inherent characteristics of quantum to actually come up with a better answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I know it doesn't, it seems to not make sense because no one has invented it yet, but if we could invent a better answer, and this would be one that you can then go back and check on a classical system and say, yeah, I don't know why we didn't come up with that one. That one would be better.
So in this particular sector, so the models that you're using to derive your, optimization parameters or whatever, it's the models that are wrong and you're hoping that quantum can find you better models? Is that a correct way to look at it?
Yes. I think that's the best way to look at it. There's like three models. If you were to read all the patents on portfolio optimization in the past 10 years, there's three models. There's things like there was one guy that said kurtosis. So there's a skewing. We're not in a normal distribution of stock returns.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're not normal, you can't use a lot of the math that we were taught to do portfolio optimization. It's not a normal distribution. Therefore, come up with something different. And they talk about thicker tails. There's mm-hmm. more like highs and lows than you'd expect. Okay. And that opens up a whole nother set of math to try. And so I guess what we're looking for is something kind of on that order of magnitude. The guys who came up with the fact that, market returns and market returns aren't normally distributed, maybe there's going to be something where the injection of randomness is going to give us a better answer.
Right.
So, yes, we're looking for a better model.
And does this come about because – not necessarily
just speed.
Right. So it comes about because we don't understand the complexities of basically economic models or the economic system being a complex system as it is. Or is it we know – do we know that there are better models out there? It's just that when you formulate them, you find the maths is so difficult and so computationally intensive that, current supercomputers just, can't solve the equations in a reasonable amount of time. Or do we just not even know the models exist?
So it's not that the investment banks can't afford the money to pay for the compute time, because they can. It's not that. It's the other. It's that today we're using publicly available data. Today's models are battle-tested every day in the markets.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, could we find an advantage working with a financial institution and leveraging quantum effects to make that one institution better, even 1% better? And if so, we've created value using a quantum system.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, moving on a little bit from, we sort of got stuck in that for a while, but it was great because, I very rarely have a strong conversation on anyone from the financial industry that really has any idea what they want out of this. What's your interactions been like with the quantum community?
Well, it's interesting. So, at first, they were very kind and polite. And so I remember I wasn't even on Twitter I was on LinkedIn and I was having about 7 interactions a day, right? So I post something and, you know, my friend from the controller's office would say, hey, good to see you out there. But I didn't know where to even find the quantum community. And then I spoke to a CEO who said, you know, you need to be on Twitter. That's where the action is. So I got on Twitter, and at first people like a John Preskill was just so nice to me that it made me kind of stay the course. So now I've got, I don't know, maybe it's 530 followers on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I think on YouTube I'm up to 49 subscribers for my videos. By the way, subscribe to the videos. It's a good way to learn what we're learning.
I'll send everyone's, you the link.
Yeah, everyone's polite. Everyone's nice. Everyone's kind of watching. And I've had a number of people approach me because they want to work for us. Because they understand that we have staying power. We have a vision. We're self-funded. We're not stuck like with a VC right now. Mm-hmm. And we have a chance of discovering something big. Just everyone's not, it's interesting, right? As long as we don't step on a lot of toes, I've learned not to promise that quantum can, you know, balance your checkbook tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. So I'm much more realistic, and I just read a ton of papers, academic papers. I had 4 classes towards a PhD, and one of the things that they taught us was how to read an academic paper.
Right.
So I just read a ton of papers, and I interact more on the papers and on the content than I do just on hype. And so I think as long as I stay in the content, people are happy to engage.
Do you work much with some of the quantum software startups at all, or are you basically all on your own?
We're pretty much on our own. Although that doesn't mean we don't have interactions. So it's maybe this is the way I can say it. I remember a conversation with a very large player, and I was able just through my own network get to the CEO. This is a big company. And so I sat down with the CEO. And he's like, all right, well, tell me what you're thinking. And I said, well, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. And he's like, great. Connected me with a CFO. And after a little while, they said, you know what? We're not in a position to work with such a small company. Like if you basically, like if you got to $50, $100 million in revenue, we'd be glad to work with you, but you're too small. Mm-hmm. And I've actually had a couple companies be willing to look at signing agreements, NDAs. We're also still just too small. And so everyone's kind of polite and waiting for us to come up with something. And by the way, this is the magic of why we got sucked into the rat hole of trying to find something. Because the only way we're going to be a player, because we're not writing software and we're not building hardware, we have to invent something that's completely new, mm-hmm. or else we'll never be big enough to have a seat at the table. And that's what it comes down to. Like we have to be Hank Reardon or Howard Roark in the Ayn Rand novels. We have to come up with something that no one's ever done before, mm-hmm. in order to earn our place, you know, in the ecosystem.
I mean, you were at the Q2B conference in San Jose last week, wasn't it?
Yes.
I mean, what did you see out of that from your perspective, especially as somebody who hasn't, you know, come through the last 20 years of, you know, everything that's happened in the quantum field? I mean, what did you take away from it?
So it was a great conference. So I spent the first day in a different conference, one that we're not supposed to talk about much with social media. And that first day, it's a government consortium thing. That was very, very informative. The level of conversation was much deeper, more technical, more mm-hmm. heavy. And from that, what I realized is almost all of the technology providers believe it's still too early. Nobody is promising usefulness. There's no usefulness. This is it's like a whole bunch of research projects.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what I heard from the government folks, and some of these were just one-on-one conversations, is get me something useful. Jeff, get me something useful. Like, I'm not going to wait around. And so you have the hardware guys doing things that aren't useful yet. You have the customers saying, I will buy. I will spend a ton of money if you give me a useful application. And then you have guys like us in the middle. And so that was what I got out of day one. What I got out of day two, which was the first day of Q2B, is that every vendor was willing to talk to us when they heard we were applying for grant money and that we were going to do some research, because this is kind of the stock in trade at this point. Mm-hmm. There's very few paying clients, but DOE money, NSF money, that's good money, right? It'll pay some bills. And so I found a lot of interest, and everyone kind of understood, right? Replicating what we can do today has some value. It's not bad. It's some value. But figuring out that next step, I call it 2B. 2A is replicate. 2B is extend. They're all willing to work with us on 2B. And so I think if I were to pick up the phone, I could get collaboration letters from six or seven vendors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I also met a lot of students. It was great, actually, because part of being an exec in consulting is you're constantly mentoring. And just the students. I was sitting with Andy Bessiel, and we were talking to a student about negotiating for a quantum job and how much their salary should be. And so quantum is just like cloud was 10 years ago. It's just a new tech. It may work, it may not, but people still got to earn a living. They still want to be useful, and so they're still that kind of day to day. That's what makes it fun.
And I mean, is there any particular hardware platform that, let's say, is your favorite or something that you were really quite impressed by?
Nope. Well, that's so. I don't have a favorite. I truly believe there's a horse race. I actually think there's one or two technologies that you don't hear about that could become bigger. I tweeted on Diamond NV vacancies, mm-hmm. or cavities. I know that the DOE is looking at SRF technology, the stuff that they use for the particle accelerators.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's the ones we have, and then there's all these new techs. And what I would say is, and what I would recommend to a buyer of technology, is you can learn about all the technologies, but don't lock yourself into just one of them.
Right.
Because it's truly a horse race. The hype, though, in the IonQ presentation was truly impressive. I took some pictures of the slides, and I didn't dare tweet them because I thought I'd get in trouble for hyping too much.
Oh, but, well, certainly other people were tweeting them. I certainly saw the slides from IonQ.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, when you look at that, you think this is nirvana, right? This is magic. So, and I don't believe even magic, by the way.
Well, we'll see how they go.
Yeah, it makes me want to try the what is it, the BV algorithm.
Right.
Vazirani algorithm, the B Vazirani algorithm, right? Hey, try it out, see how it goes. And I don't know. I respect everyone who's working in the field. There's a lot of on our team we have a theoretical physicist PhD. We have a math PhD. And then we have a bunch of people with master's degrees. The only thing that we have in common is we all passionately believe in quantum, and that none of us independently could do what we're trying to do collectively. The multidisciplinary nature of our work, it's way more than anything I've done in IT before. At 30 years of IT, you could take two of us, throw us on an airplane, we can go solve a client's problem. And if we had to borrow, let's say, a DBA or an OS guy, they weren't hard to find. Mm-hmm. But here, math, physics, particle science, product management, computer science, finance, you know what I mean? Photonics guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's such a diverse group that you have to bring together. That actually will be of strategic advantage to diverse companies or companies that welcome diversity in their workforce.
So at the moment, you guys at Chicago Quantum, you're very much focused on this, you know, trying to develop some kind of new product, financial services related. Do you do anything else that would, you know, traditionally be thought of when it comes to consultancy and sort of new deep tech? I mean,
so we have two other areas that, just because of the cycle of our business, we don't talk much about. One of them is quantum key distribution. We have an agreement with ID Quantique to work with customers in the United States and help them secure communication channels. And we're also part of the post-quantum cryptography team. So we've been to the second standardization conference. We're on the mailing list, so we kind of keep up. And we've had a few conversations with clients about security and PQC and being, you know, quantum agile, I think they call it. Mm-hmm. So that's – we're more likely to get, like, significant revenue out of the security space, you know, than we are on the good side, where we're trying to make money for, you know, investors. That's the second. And then the third area where we focus is on just the whole process of working between a vendor and a client.
Right.
Within the quantum context, it's interesting now because everyone's suddenly moving to the cloud. And that wasn't the case a few weeks ago. And then there's going to be other things. But so we have deep, deep expertise. I have three people from IBM that I work with where we can help a client build a negotiation strategy, build a pricing strategy or a cost strategy to work on an IT infrastructure model. And so quantum doesn't really affect the IT model enough yet, but if you were a company with $1 billion IT budget, we could come in. We can either help you improve the value from that spend, increase your margin if you're a vendor, or increase, you know, or lower your cost if you're a client. Mm-hmm. And that's where I thought we'd be finding more, you know, of the interest. But that seems to be a field that's gone away with the cloud. People don't worry so much about IT outsourcing. And so it's freed us up to spend all of our time on quantum.
Cool. So we're just coming up on 55 minutes now. I mean, usually don't push it much beyond that on the podcast. So just as I always do for everyone who comes on, is there anything coming up, anything that you'd like to plug or get out there into the community?
Oh, boy. So I guess the first would be, if anyone would like to collaborate either on our portfolio optimization work or potentially on the DOE SBIR Topic 36, we're open. So we're open to collaboration and we're working, you know, open to working with other people. Second thing I'd like to plug is take a look at our outreach, whether it's through Twitter, you know, Chicago Quantum on Twitter, whether it's through YouTube, Medium articles, and just interact with us. If we say something silly, interact with us, talk to us about it. If we say something smart, reinforce it. And just be part of it. And so nothing really. I mean, my joking around would be we bought T-shirts. We made Quantum Advantage T-shirts. You know, wonderful stocking stuffer, right? Buy now before Christmas. But I have a feeling it's just if we discover something that changes the game in financial services, we'll have a lot more to talk about the next time we get together.
Yeah, I imagine so. And I think that's probably a good place to close it off today. So, Jeff, thanks a lot for sitting down for an hour for me.
Simon, you're very welcome, and happy holidays to you, your family, and your listeners.
You too. So thanks, everyone, for downloading this next episode. I have no idea when the next one will come out, but stay tuned to the Twitter feed and our other social media things to stream it when it becomes available. So thanks a lot again. Cheers.